Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Well, good evening, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome back to Well Armed Radio. Great to be with you. This is where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our bi-weekly, maybe once a month, twice. It's been a couple weeks since we've done a show, so thank you for joining us in our sometimes weekly, sometimes bi-weekly, sometimes once or twice a month, relentless and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. Vigorous, relentless, and sometimes ruthless pursuit of freedom. Broadcasting live from the Very Well Armed Studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. And it's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you all. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. Excuse me. My name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be part of the show if you so choose with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. 563-999-3787 is the studio number. 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning. No sacred cows here. And, well, I say first 15 minutes of the show is open line, but we rarely get takers on that. So we'll the show is your open line. If you want to call in, give me a call. So here we are. March is off with off and running here. I guess, well, I didn't do a show last week, so we've been in March for a bit here. But, you know, it's I don't really have a not favorite time of year anymore because ever since we got the our little German Shepherd, well, little German Shepherd, he's a big German Shepherd, our little buddy Gus, who's a 107-pound German Shepherd, we go hiking every Saturday during the winter. So, like, I don't know, fall's probably my favorite time of year. Summer is it's just so hard to say. Spring seems to always be like a little bit, a tease of good weather and then cold. It just fall seems like there's more meaty, warm weather, like not too warm. But so yeah, fall's for sure my favorite season. And then I guess I'd say summer and then spring and then winter. But I don't really mind winter anymore. I used to, you know, not dread winter. I mean, when you're a kid, you love winter. I mean, the snow and, you know, you enjoy sledding and all that crap. But anyway, so here we're into the armpit of spring, which is March, which you get, you know, some nice days. And then you start feeling like it's that pleasant, not frigid time of year. And then, like, yesterday was freezing. And then probably below. I got up yesterday morning and it was below zero wind chills. And here we are in March. So it's just, I don't know. Ever since I've been cutting weight, you know, we bodybuilders, we don't call it losing weight. We call it cutting weight. But I started probably January of 2020. I started cutting because I've always been around 297. I did get up to about 307 back in 2015, I think. And then cut it back down to 297. And that's really where I hung out because that's where I've been for, I don't know, the past 20 years. And then I was like, you know, it's getting older. Probably be a little better to take a little bit of weight off the frame. So I started cutting. But the one thing I've noticed the most is that cold bothers me more now than it used to because I don't remember ever for years, like, I never really felt cold. I mean, and there was cold. There was times I, you know, felt cold, like, you know, below zero stuff, you know, you felt cold. But I mean, just never, cold just didn't really bother me. And then, I don't know now, I don't know if it's because, I mean, you know, first I'm, you know, getting older every day, like we all are. But yeah, there's just the cold. It seems like, you know, even short, but like we go hiking with the dog on Saturdays. And then when we're hiking, I'm super, you know, you're walking, you know, you don't even need that much, even in cold weather, you don't need that much of a coat to keep yourself warm because you just keep yourself warm from hiking. But then we stop after the hike. We, when it's a little bit warmer, we tailgate. I do have a heater that I put out for my fiance and a little table with a welding blanket over it to funnel the heat to her. But this year we've just, more just sat, in the truck and, had snacks and I mixed myself a drink, out on the tailgate and, you know, so it's, but even now, just like if I, you know, we'll drive somewhere, I stop to, you know, jump out and grab some more snacks from the back of the truck or something. And just being out there for 5 minutes, you know, letting the dog out to take a leak or whatever, when we stop someplace, let the dog take a leak. And I'm cold again. I'm just, I don't know. It's weird for me because I never used to be bothered by the cold. And again, either I'm getting old or just from cutting weight that, or both. but yeah, so it was just frigid Saturday. Now today was a nice day. So, I mean, that's what we get here in March, but it's March is just, spring in Wisconsin is just a season of disappointment because you get a nice day and you think, warm weather. And then it's gone. And then you're going to get snow again. Speaking of snow here in New Berlin, we got a dusting of snow last night. And then of course, quarter inch of snow, half inch of salt on the roads, which was just wonderful. How so I bought my fiance a brand new car. I bought it for her put a deposit down last January 8th of 2021. At that time, the dealer's like, yeah, so it's a 2022 Acura MDX Type S. And the base model MDX came out last February. They were taking deliveries in mid-February, delivering those to dealerships. And so, but I wanted the Type S has a turbocharged motor. And a bunch of other features, air suspension, you know, this phenomenal 25-speaker, 1,000-watt sound system. So it's just, and then, you know, all kinds of other bells and whistles too. But anyway, so I ordered that for my fiance, and we're sitting waiting for this thing to come in. I didn't tell her until her birthday, which was end of March here. So last year on her birthday, I had, with the help of one of our daughters, again, I call them, they're my stepdaughters, but I call them our daughters, tricked her into going to the car dealership. One of the girls was going to take her to Goddess and the Baker over in Brookfield because she likes to eat there, and it's just a nice little cafe place or something. I've never been there, so I couldn't tell anything more about it. But so on the way there, then she, boom, takes a side turn and pulls into the Acura dealership. And I'm on the phone with Kim at the time, my fiance, and I can hear her saying to our daughter, Kayla, she's like, Kayla, what are you doing? You're going the wrong way. And so Kayla turns into the Acura dealership, and then I'm talking to Kim on the phone, and I said, oh, look over your shoulder. And so it was me, and I was there. Surprise, hey, you're getting a new car. And so she was surprised, and it was, then I told her yours is on order. So she was able to test drive one of the base model, the 2022 MDXs. So yeah, the dealer's like, expect it. So when I ordered it in January, he said, expect it in April, late April, which on all the news reports, they were saying early summer. So I was like, well, but it's the dealership. Maybe they know something that, you know, the news doesn't, which I've since found out they don't. And then there's chip shortages. You start hearing about chip shortages last spring. Then you start hearing about plant shutdowns, and Acura shut down their plant for a while in the summer. And it was one thing after another. And all of a sudden, you know, delay. Then it was going to be released late summer. Then it wasn't going to be released late summer. Then it was going to be released in December. And then December comes and goes, and then it was going to be released for the holiday. That didn't happen. And then that was what they were saying, in the showroom is by the holiday. And then once January comes, then they start actually delivering the Type S model. So we finally got ours on Friday, and it was a super cool car. I mean, it's a really cool car, but yeah, I'm thinking, well, I said to myself, well, the good thing about the car being delayed till after winter is like, well, we'll at least avoid the salt for, you know, to have, you know, a full summer season without getting doused in Wisconsin salt, road salt. And then here we go yesterday, last night we get, I mean, it wasn't even snowing when I went to bed, but here, wake up and there was a heavy dusting of snow. I mean, maybe a half inch of snow on the ground that was already starting to pretty much almost all melt away. And so then when my fiance left, of course, time changed. So she usually leaves around 10. Well, it was actually around 11 because we lost an hour. So I'm looking outside and the roads were clear and my driveway, which I never, ever, ever put chemicals on, was clear. So then I go out this afternoon to go to the driving range. I'm driving and there's just salt everywhere. And there's even like in the center median strip where cars don't drive, it's still the granulized salt. Like there wasn't even enough snow on the ground to dissolve the salt. It's still the salt kernels, the salt, you know, the chunks, the salty, I don't want to say crystals because crystals could be really, really small and flaky and tiny, but you know, the big rock salt chunks all over the center medium that didn't get dissolved. And, you know, they're probably about the size of a pea. But yeah, I swear they just love to throw that shit on the ground. I some winters, you know, when we have a lot of snow, then they stop salting, they don't salt anything. And then you got a winter like this and you get a quarter inch of snow and they throw it on a half an inch of freaking salt. So yeah, that was disappointing. And here I thought my one positive that I was trying to convince myself of benefit from having her car be delayed was that there wasn't going to be road salt on the brand new car. And although, I mean, it wasn't too bad today. The roads were dry. So it was just like the powdery road salt, which doesn't get quite as reactive as, you know, water dissolved road salt and which sprays and pushes into everywhere. But anyway, so that's the weather here in Wisconsin, and it's spring. What do you expect? So here's what I got for the show this weekend. So I'm going to talk about Rebecca Clefishy going to meet with Donald Trump. Going to talk about the Russia Ukraine war. And then this just came to me a week or two ago, how I think blood donations is a scam. And I'll expand on that here later in the show. So to start with, you might have seen on the news that this was came out on Friday morning. I saw it. I was listening to the Dan O'Donnell show. And they're making a big deal about how Wisconsin Right Now had published that Rebecca Clefish had gone to Mar-a-Lago, I guess, or gone and I think it was at Mar-a-Lago, gone and met with Donald Trump down at Mar-a-Lago. And this just I just laugh because, you know, Rebecca, I'm not a Rebecca Clefish fan at all. I think she's too starchy. She's too phony. She's too scripted. And I think she's typical politician, would tell you anything you want to hear. I do believe she's the quintessential I call it the Madison Marsh. You know, if it's the DC swamp, then I call it the Madison Marsh. Typical Madison Marsh creature. You know, she was a lieutenant governor under Walker, and she did some stupid shit. You know, she was supporting all kinds of criminal justice reform, and of course, which she's since backed away from. But that's just what strikes me as Rebecca Clefish. She strikes me as a focus group tested establishment Republican, not a freedom fighting, independently minded conservative. Just a typical GOP establishment politician. And so I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like Rebecca gets into office and we're going to have just what we had with 2012 to 2018 Scott Walker, because 2010, 2011 Scott Walker was pretty good. Although he did throw constitutional carry under the bus right away. Scott Walker was really just a one-trick pony. Act 10 was all he had. That was his big move. So I can't even say that like first term Walker was good or first half term, because it was really just, he really was just a one-trick pony. So I'd love to see, and I don't think it would be the case. I mean, and I don't know who's going to win the primary, but I'd love to see someone who was more like Scott Walker, Act 10 Scott Walker, but I don't think that's Rebecca Clefish, and I don't think that in any stretch that she would be a transformative governor. I think she would be more go along to get along. I think she would be more, I think if Rebecca Clefish is elected, then Robin Voss remains the most powerful Republican in the state. Speaking of which, I don't know if you guys saw, if you're on the Wisconsin Carry Facebook group, Robin Voss has a primary challenger. I can finally say, Adam Steen. I met Adam. I was invited to speak at a Republican political action event in West Dallas a few weeks ago, early February, maybe, or mid late. It was a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was like February 19th, seems to stick in my head. But so I met Adam Steen there. And he didn't tell me when I met, and we just chatted after my speech. But then out in the hallway, while Scott Fitzgerald was speaking, because Congressman Fitzgerald was on right after me. And then we went to chatted him a little bit more and found out that, oh, he's running for, well, he alluded to this three or four, maybe a week before, I think it was probably about a week before he officially announced that he was running to challenge Robin Voss in a primary in Robin Voss's assembly district. So I really like Adam. He's a good dude. I think he ran for first congressional district seat a few years back, and then dropped out of the primary, I think, early on. I don't think he stayed in the primary even until the primary election. I think he dropped out and endorsed Brian Stile. But anyway, I'm excited to see where Adam's campaign goes. It would be great to unseat Robin Voss. That would be epic. And like I said, I'm not a Clefish fan, but of course it was reported Friday morning that the Rebecca Clefish goes to meet with Trump. And of course she's looking for Trump's endorsement. I thought this was funny because here's the thing. So everybody's like, oh, if Rebecca's meeting with Trump, she's going to get Trump's endorsement. Well, I'm not so quick to jump to that conclusion because here's the thing. So I know that Tim Rantham, met with Trump. I don't know because I wasn't there and it hasn't been reported, but I have on good authority, I guess that's the way I'll phrase it. I have on good authority that Tim Rantham met with Donald Trump at CPAC. And yet that wasn't reported because why? Because I don't think Tim Rantham's people went out there and leaked it. I think Rebecca Clefish's people were all happy to leak, oh, Rebecca's meeting with Trump, because just getting that out there in the news is their, I believe, is their tactic to pump up Rebecca. Oh, if Rebecca's meeting with Trump, if she's going to get the Trump endorsement and start getting a whole bunch of buzz, I could just see, because that's how Rebecca's people operate. I could just see Rebecca's people leaking that information. I could just see Rebecca's people leaking the information that that she met with Trump for the sole purpose of trying to generate positive press for her, positive press in the eyes of the Republican primary field. And the conservative field. So do I think that Clefish is going to get Trump's endorsement? No, I don't. And here's why. But I'm not surprised. You know, a friend of mine sent me the link and, oh, did you see this? Clefish is meeting with Trump. Oh, my God. Here's the thing. My opinion, Donald Trump's, he's going to meet with everybody. Donald Trump isn't going to not meet with candidates for governor. I don't see Donald Trump refusing to meet with anybody that was running for governor of the state of Wisconsin. So we've got Rebecca Clefish, Kevin Nicholson, Tim Rantham. And I was supporting Kevin and I still, for me, it's, you know, I really like Kevin, Kevin Nicholson and, or Tim Rantham. I'd be happy with either of them. I feel like Kevin Nicholson, I think, would be a ball buster, maverick, independent, conservative-minded governor who would be Trump-like as a governor, or maybe, say, be DeSantis-like as a governor. But Tim Rantham's kind of proven himself to me, how he stood up to Robin Voss and how he's – so I think Tim Rantham has proven that he's not an establishment shill. And that goes a long way for me. So I guess if I could snap my fingers, I'd probably say – I'd take Rantham over Nicholson, but I would take either Rantham or Nicholson over Clefishy. So Clefish goes down there to meet with Trump. I'm certain that her people intentionally leaked it because they're trying to make it seem like, oh, Clefish is going to get Trump's endorsement. But so why? Here's why I don't think that Clefish will get Trump's endorsement. So first off, if you'll recall, Donald Trump during the primary here in Wisconsin back in 2016. So this is when Scott Walker was in the primary and Ted Cruz and Kasich and Jeb Bush and who else was Ben Carson. Anyway, all the very large field of primary candidates back in the 2016 presidential race. And Scott Walker, in his debates with Trump, he was very he was very insulting to Trump. And then when Scott Walker got out of the race, he said that he was clearing the field so that a conservative could take the, you know, so that support could coalesce behind a conservative, because initially, you know, Trump was always only getting like 30% of the vote, 30% of the primary vote in the various states. And then the thought was, well, Trump's not the most popular candidate. He's just the one that coalesces the most support for him. But 70% of people were supporting someone other than Trump. And so then the mindset was, well, if all those other people would drop out and it was just like, say, Trump and Cruz, then the 70% Cruz would have 70% support and Trump would stay at his 30% support. In fact, I was a Cruz supporter back in 2016. I always liked Trump. I was glad Trump was in the race. I thought that his making the race, making immigration an issue in the race, an unapologetic issue in the race, was a really good thing that Trump brought to the race. But I just had that comfort level, like many people would with a politician, a Republican politician, who you thought was more tested. And then you find out that, of course, I think Trump was a better president than Ted Cruz would have been. I think Ted Cruz would have been a good president, but I think Donald Trump was a great president and will be a great president again in 2024. But so we all thought, I mean, I think the going thing was everybody was thinking that if more people dropped out, that the support would coalesce behind one of the more traditional candidates, and Trump's ceiling was that 30%, 32, 33%. Well, what we ended up finding out is the more people that dropped out, the more support went behind Trump. And so I thought when it was just back down to Trump and Ted Cruz, when I forget who was like Kasich, like never dropped out. I think he like held on for like till the convention or something. But so I forget who was the last one to drop out before, when it was like down to just Trump and I can't remember if Chris Christie was running. I can't remember if Rick Perry was running. I don't remember who was all in the Republican candidate primary back in 2016, but there was a lot. And so after, was Huckabee running? I can't remember. Don't quote me on that. It's been too long. But there was a huge number of people running. And the thought was always, look, when these people that are all getting 10%, they drop out and all their 10%, their support goes behind, you know, someone other than Trump. But that's what didn't happen. What ended up happening was all these people dropped out and their support, most of their support ended up going behind Trump. And so that's why it turned out the way she did. But so remember, though, that Scott Walker really trashed Trump on the way out. He said, you know, I'm dropping out so that support can coalesce behind a true conservative, a real conservative. When Donald Trump came to Wisconsin to campaign, when it was Wisconsin's primary election coming up, Scott Walker was trashing him. I think Scott Walker was supporting Kasich. I can't remember for sure, but I know Scott Walker was not supporting Donald Trump in the primary. I'm pretty sure he was supporting Kasich from former Ohio governor. And so he was campaigning against Trump and made some insulting comments to Trump. And I just don't think that with Rebecca Clefish's close association with Scott Walker being the lieutenant governor. And remember, lieutenant governor it's not a running mate. It's not like the governor doesn't pick the lieutenant governor like the president picks the vice president as a running mate. For lieutenant governor, they campaign separately. So Clefish was elected separately from Scott Walker. They're not on the same ticket. It could have been any number of people but Rebecca Clefish came through and ended up being, I don't think she was necessarily the first choice. I've heard people say that Rebecca Clefish wasn't the first choice for lieutenant governor among many in the establishment, but either way, she became a lieutenant governor and she was a faithful servant to Scott Walker. And I think that she's just an establishment creature. That's what I think. I think Rebecca Clefish is establishment to the core. I think she's not a new kind of Republican that would put people first. I think she's too entrenched with the GOP establishment, not bold enough, a typical say what you got to say politician. And so with that association, I just also remember, so I don't think Rebecca Clefish is likely to get Trump's endorsement because she was associated with Scott Walker. She's an establishment Republican, and that just doesn't strike me as Donald Trump's type that he would endorse. In addition to that, remember that Donald Trump, when Rebecca Clefish was out, everybody knew Becky Clefish, she was running for governor. Everybody knew that. So with that knowledge being out there, Donald Trump came in and tweeted or something, was it before he was off Twitter or was it? Anyway, Donald Trump made some kind of public comment because I remember seeing it reported in the news that he had encouraged Sean Duffy to run for governor. And so I think that there was who would have been an automatic Trump. I mean, if Trump encourages someone to run for governor, that's essentially an endorsement, but Sean Duffy decided not to run for governor. But the fact that Trump was looking for someone other than Clefish tells me that he's unlikely to endorse Rebecca Clefish, because if she was the kind of candidate that he was going to endorse, why would he have gone out after she was already known to be running and try to encourage Sean Duffy to run in the primary? So, and I also just, again, think it's funny that, like, Tim Rantham meets with, now remember, Tim Rantham, he is supported by Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell's the MyPillow guy. Mike Lindell was in town when Tim Rantham did his announcement, when he announced his run for governor. Mike Lindell, I think Mike Lindell's a billionaire. I think he's doing the bank. He's offering a lot of financial support to Tim Rantham. But remember, Mike Lindell is also a close friend, I guess you'd say, with Donald Trump. Mike Lindell was meeting with Trump in the Oval or at the White House back in the time between the stolen election and January 6th or whatever. Mike Lindell had personal meetings with Trump. The news media covered him walking out of the White House after having met with Trump. And then, so it was, it seems to me that Mike Lindell wouldn't be out encouraging Tim Rantham to run for governor if he didn't think that Tim Rantham, one, could win, and two, could get Donald Trump's endorsement. Because again, I believe that Mike Lindell, being close with Trump, wouldn't have pushed someone to run that Trump wasn't very likely to support. Now, on the other hand, Trump's a businessman, and he's going to meet with everybody and gather information and then make a decision. So I think as a matter of courtesy, I wouldn't see Trump refusing to meet with Rebecca Clefish. And to be honest, this is kind of how politics works. He would want to meet with Rebecca just to establish, because if she does win, he's going to want to have a working relationship with her, a positive one. And so I don't know if Trump's going to endorse in the race. I feel like Trump would endorse in the race. I feel like when Trump does endorse in this Wisconsin primary for governor, that's the kingmaker and that's who's going to win. If he doesn't, I think that'll speak volumes. I think if Trump decides not to endorse in the race, I think it might be because Trump likes to, if he doesn't see the other candidates, Nicholson or Rantham, being viable in their own right. Because I've heard people say that, Trump's endorsement is a 30-point bump in a primary. Trump's endorsement is worth 30 points in a primary election. And I tend to agree with that. But if, right now, Nicholson hasn't had a bunch of big media campaigns, big media spends, ramped them the same. Trump might be just sitting back to make sure that Nicholson or Rantham evolve to be the viable candidates that we believe they will. And then once they are, because I don't think Trump wants to, Trump likes it when the people that he endorses wins, of course. And so but I don't know if he has enough confidence in his endorsement to endorse someone that is maybe only pulling, 10% of the primary field vote. And I don't trust the polling, but Republican strategists probably have their own internal polls that they have some more confidence in than some of these published polls. So anyway, I think that in all likelihood, Trump is holding out just to let the field simmer a little bit, let the race shake itself out a little bit and see if any of the candidates make a big move or any of the candidates start to show big upward momentum. And then that being the case, I would expect Trump to endorse. And I just wouldn't expect it to endorse Clefish. It doesn't make any sense to me why Trump would endorse Clefish. It does make sense to me why he would meet with her if she wants to come. If she wants to meet with Trump, fine. I could see him, I can't see him refusing to meet with her. That doesn't seem like a wise strategy or a wise decision to not meet with her. But I think it's just funny that Tim Rantham meets with Trump and his staff and campaign staff wasn't out there trying to leak it to the media. But Becca Clefish goes down there and Becky's meeting with Trump, just trying to, it seems to me again, like the phony political tactical kind of crap that, that Becky's campaign would be so so typical to leverage. So yeah, not surprised. I still think that as it shakes out a little bit, I feel like Rantham, if he can get enough momentum to be a viable candidate in this primary election, and I think that he will, but if he can demonstrate that to Trump that he's a viable candidate, then I would say, I would expect Trump to endorse Rantham. Again, I have no inside information, but that's just kind of the way I would lean. So next thing I was going to talk about tonight, what should I do first? Should I do the blood center? Let's do the blood center first. So I was thinking about this the other day. I feel like blood donation and the blood center, which is now called, it used to be called Blood Center Wisconsin or something. Now it's called Versity. I feel like it's a sham. And here's why I think it's a sham. Because, I mean, certainly blood donation, blood is not a sham. But I'll take a step back here. Here, I'm bringing a boy who's in the field. He said, maybe the candidates don't want President Trump's endorsement. Yeah, I don't think that's the case. I mean, if Clefish didn't want President Trump's endorsement, then she wouldn't have gone down there to meet with them. And then Tim Rantham, who went down to meet with Trump also, again, that wasn't widely reported, but I heard through the grapevine from people that he was down there meeting with Trump at CPAC. So yeah, I don't see that being the case. I think the candidates all want Trump's endorsement. Anyway, back to Blood Center Versity. So it used to be called Blood Center Wisconsin. Now it's Versity owns it. Versity owns, you know, I think blood centers in other states as well. And so, of course, blood is a necessary medical supply. So I'm not suggesting that, you know, there's like the blood isn't a needed resource. But the thing I think is a sham is, yes, I asked the question, like, why don't you get paid to donate blood? Which, of course, would make it not a donation. But why wouldn't you get, I guess it's still, no, you still, why wouldn't you get, because, you know, donate blood. See, we just coined that phrase now, donate blood. Why wouldn't you get paid to give your blood? You know, all the stuff you get charged when you're in the hospital. You know, Big Pharma charges $4,000 a dose for remdesivir so you can die. But you don't get compensated for giving blood. It's just, to me, something smells fishy about the whole thing. And by that, I mean, just the way that it's evolved, I think that the way that they've pushed blood donation has ended up tricking people / creating a phony sentiment that donating blood is some altruistic thing. I think that you should get paid to give blood, which again would make an donation. I think you should get paid to give blood. Certainly, if you wanted to, you know, you can do the, like, because giving blood, like, it takes time. It takes energy. I mean, when you give blood, you're going to be, you know, tired and you know, your body needs to recover from that. Back when I was in college, I mean, I was, you know, working my ass off, paying for my own food, trying to live off of ramen noodles and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And so I just, I was working at the golf course at Lake Lawn Resort, and I went in one day and the head pro was like, oh, I took the liberty of signing you up for blood donation, Nick. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not giving blood. Cause I just, I don't like seeing people get used. And I just don't think that, I think blood donation is using people. And Versity turns around, and when they sell the blood to hospitals, they charge the hospitals, well, I forget what it was, but I want to say it's like, you know, thousands of dollars per unit for blood. It's a lot of money that they charge the hospitals for blood. And of course, Versity will say, well, we have to run our, you know, we have to bank the blood. I guarantee there's a bunch of executives at Versity who are making big money using people's goodwill for profit. And so I'm not against giving blood. I'm against this notion that we should be the people should be giving blood and not getting compensated for it. Now, of course, you get compensated for giving plasma, which I guess is like a much longer procedure. But I think you go in to give blood, I think you should get compensated. And then people are like, oh, well, you know, that would drive up the cost of blood. Okay, so you're telling me hospitals already pay. I forget what it was. I researched this before and I forgot to put it in my notes, but I want to say it's a lot of money. I want to say, let me see if I can Google it quick. How much does a hospital pay for, oh, there it goes, for a pint of blood. All right. So here's Florida's blood center. good bucks for sperm if you donate sperm. I read somewhere that a pint of blood sells in American hospitals for $180 to $300, depending on the market. Here I'm seeing the typical pint of blood, $130 to $150. I thought I read somewhere else that it was more. But, yeah, I'm seeing that across a couple different things here on Google. So, yeah, here on average, Florida's blood center charges the equivalent of $312 for every pint of blood it sells. So in Florida, they charge about $300. Okay, so let's say $300. Let's say it's $300 for a pint of blood that a hospital pays to, you know, the blood center, to Versity or whoever. So why couldn't you make it $350 and then pay $50 to the person donating the blood? So then instead of all these blood drives, and because here's where this came up with my family is my daughter, Julia, who's a sophomore. She goes to school and they're doing a blood drive at New Berlin West High School. And there's all this peer pressure to donate blood. My fiance's kids, like, I always give them shit because they don't hydrate enough. They, you know, they're in sports, but they don't eat and they don't get the nutrition that you need to be a really high performer in sports. They think you could, and again, kids are, you know, but if you want to really perform well in sports, you got to hydrate, you got to get good caloric intake, you know, good food, lots of protein, and they eat okay. It's not like they sit there and eat junk food, but they are. Like, you know, they don't hydrate well enough. And I've observed this because if you want to be a good athlete, you have to, it's not just show up and, oh, you're great and talented and it's going to work. No, you have to still put the work in to be a great athlete. So she's going to go donate blood. And I'm like, well, Julie, you know, you donate blood, you're going to be tired. You've got a game coming up, a basketball game coming up that night. If you donate blood, you're going to be tired for it. Well, she went and donated blood anyway. And that's fine, whatever. But like, there's so much peer pressure to donate blood during these blood drives. And I remember it from when I was working at a golf course and the head pro, my boss, told me to go donate blood. And I, of course, declined. But I like when people's freedom is respected, their freedom to choose what's for their body, their medical decisions, whatever. And I don't like it when it's even peer pressure. And so that's what kind of got me all fired up about this whole blood donation thing is when they peer pressure my daughter into giving blood, and then everybody's like, oh, it's so, you know, give blood. It saves, giving blood saves lives. Well, certainly you need blood to save lives, but you should get paid for that. The shit that a hospital charges you when you're in there getting a surgery done, and they can't charge $50 more for blood so that you can pay people. And maybe if you paid people to donate blood, paid people to give blood, you wouldn't have to do all these phony ass blood drives. People would be showing up to make some damn money donating their blood. And if that means that then you have to charge for a unit of blood, you have to charge $350 instead of $300, great. But I think everybody would be better off if they stopped trying to run this thing like some noble mission of blood donation. And look, if you're going for a procedure, like let's say you're going to go have a surgery, you can bank your own blood. So then, of course, you certainly don't need to go get paid to bank your own blood. And then let's say that, like, you have some unexpected accident. Well, then, you know, friends and family, they could donate in those cases. And like, that's what happens when a cop gets shot or something. Boom, all the cops go to the hospital to donate blood. But there's just so much peer pressure for people to donate. And then they prey on young people. They go to high schools and they go to colleges and they go prey on young people to donate, which I find that unjust. I find that wrong, morally wrong. And so then the blood centers charge the hospitals like $300. Then the hospitals charge a patient. That's where it was, because I did research this part. The blood centers, I think, charge the hospitals like $300 per unit, but then the hospitals charge patients like thousands of dollars per transfusion. And again, I know there's the medical procedure of transfusing the blood and all that kind of stuff. But again, my point just being, why can't you add some to that so that you can figure into the cost profile enough to pay people to give blood so that you wouldn't have to do these cheesy blood drives where you peer pressure people and make turn it into some big, oh, you know, you're saving lives. No, you're actually giving someone the raw materials for their product for free. I mean, I don't think it's a lot different than a big pharmacy company that makes pharmaceuticals expecting people to donate. I'm trying to think of a good example here, because you wouldn't like donate. You don't have like raw material to donate, because you know the chemical compounds that go into pharmaceuticals, you know, probably aren't things sitting around your house that you could donate. But I don't see how it's any different than anything else that someone is going to sell for a profit. You have to pay for your raw materials. In this case, the raw material is blood for the blood product. You should be paying people who give blood. And I think if you did pay people to give blood, you'd have more people giving blood, and you wouldn't have to do these phony blood drives and peer pressure people into giving blood for free. Instead, people who want to make some money by giving blood could do it that way. And I think capitalism works. I think, you know, anyway, my little rant on the blood center and this notion that blood donation is some altruistic thing, and it just the way that whole thing runs out, plays out. I think it would be more effective. I think it would be more efficient. I think it would be more productive if they paid people who come in to donate. And then if that means the price of blood goes up, so be it. I mean, look at the price of all the other shit that you got to pay for in the hospital when you're there. All right, last thing I was going to talk about tonight, we got 11 minutes left in the show, was, you know, this whole Russia-Ukraine invasion. So many interesting things. And look, I don't know. I mean, when it comes down to it, what's the right answer? Do I like seeing Russia invading other countries? No, of course not. Do I feel for the people of Ukraine? Yeah. Should the United States be involved or not? I just don't know. It's kind of like above my pay grade. I don't know. I haven't, you know, I pay attention to history. You know, Vietnam didn't turn out very well. you know, people start making that comparison. There's a lot of different comparisons you could make. So I don't know what, I'm not versed enough in foreign policy to say that I feel like I have a good, strong belief/opinion of what's the right thing to happen in Ukraine. Is it better for Ukraine to fall to Russia, or is it better that the United States would step in and help defend them, or, you know, which we are. I mean, we're giving them supplies. You know, Trump was giving them ammo and weapons and things like that. But here's another angle. It's interesting about this. You know, there's such universal condemnation of Russia. Republicans are condemning Russia. Democrats are condemning Russia. Big companies are condemning Russia. I read this past week that Rockwell International, just on a local level here, Rockwell International and Johnson Controls, which are both Milwaukee-based companies. Actually, Johnson Controls now, I guess, is based in like Ireland, but it's been a Milwaukee company since its founding, until it merged with Tyco a few years back. But Rockwell International and Johnson Controls are, quote, exiting Russia. Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Starbucks, they're exiting Russia. And I just think it's funny because bet your ass, or should I say when China invades Russia, excuse me, when China invades Taiwan, I was going to say if, or, you know, I was going to say bet your ass if China invades Taiwan, but I think it's probably more appropriate to say bet your ass when China invades Taiwan. I don't think you're going to see this kind of across the board universal outrage against China. I think when communist China wants to invade Taiwan, I just don't think it's going to be so universal. Right now it's universal. Everybody's anti-Russia, supports sanctions, supports this, supports that. Coke and all these consumer products companies are pulling out of Russia. Your blue chip companies, industrial companies in the United States are pulling out of Russia. Rockwell National, Johnson Controls, and that's just a couple. Those are just local ones because it's here in Milwaukee and it was reported locally because they're based here. Chris Christie made the comment on one of the Sunday morning talk shows last week or something. He said, Russia is a gas station masquerading as a country, which I think he was repeating. I don't know if John McCain said that a while back, but China is not a gas station masquerading as a country, but China is a communist country that has imperialistic desires over its neighbors, and Taiwan is a independent free nation. And so all these people, specifically Democrats I'm referring to, and people in the media who are so strong and committed to their condemnation of Russia because imperialistic communist country is invading their neighbor, I just get a feeling that their principles about imperialistic communist countries invading their neighbors are suddenly going to change if or when China invades Taiwan. Suddenly then I don't think it's going to be all, oh, shame on China, shame on China. Suddenly then I think it's going to be, oh, well, you know, it's not our place to say that part of the world, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's my prediction. I mean, remember John Cena, his little cuck moment where he made some comment, referred to Taiwan as a country, and then he had to go do that video that the Chinese Communist Party played all across China of him speaking in Chinese, apologizing. Oh, so sorry for, you know, referring to Taiwan as a country. Remember the NBA players who had made some anti-China comments and they were quickly reprimanded by their team ownership and others. It just, you know, just an interesting thing to note when you see this, everybody's on the same page condemning Russia. Bet your ass everybody ain't going to be on the same page when it comes to China, though they should be. So even watching Clay and Buck, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, who are Rush Limbaugh's replacements, on the chat, bringing a boy, says NBA will endorse China to invade Taiwan. Yeah, I mean, actually, I read that wrong. NBA will endorse Cena to invade Taiwan. Watching Clay and Buck, who's taken over for Rush Limbaugh, they've kind of gone back and forth on this. First, they were against, they're against, you know, military. I don't know that there's really anybody pushing for the United States to get militarily involved, but there are some people pushing for, like, the United States to, or for NATO to enforce a no-fly zone. There are people for the United States to do more for the Ukraine. Clay and Buck the other day were talking about this notion of Poland giving MiGs airplanes to Ukraine so that Ukraine could have some air support to help them fight against Russia, who's invading them. And then one day, the first day, Clay and Buck were saying how, oh, we don't, that's a bad idea. That's really escalating things to give planes to, or to allow those planes. So what was going to happen was Poland was going to send planes to the United States military base in, I believe, Germany, where Ukrainian pilots were going to come fly them to Ukraine. And then that was supposedly the plan. And then at the last minute, the Biden administration pulled the plug on it and said, no, we don't want that to happen. And so first, Clay and Buck were, I forget which one it was, I still get those two confused, but when this was first proposed, they were on the side of, hey, this is a bad idea. Providing air support, letting planes take off from our military base that are going to be used by Ukraine is really going to signal to Putin that the United States is involved in this war. We don't want to get involved in another war, blah, blah, blah. And then a day later, they had changed their tune, that they were then supportive of the idea. And it just made me, I don't want to say it made me nervous, but it just makes me wonder, because the thing I loved about Rush Limbaugh was he was always independent. He was always his own guy. You knew that his opinions were his and no one was telling him what to say. No one was giving him talking points. No one was planting talking points for them to go out and sell to the American public. Rush Limbaugh said what he think. But it made me wonder when Clay and Buck did a 360, or I guess a 180, did a switcheroo, first being against allowing Ukraine to fly planes from the United States military base in Germany, and then being for it. I couldn't help but wonder if they aren't getting talking points or trying to sell the ideas, trying to promote those ideas on their radio show. And again, maybe not. I could just be too cynical. But all I do know with this whole Russia situation, Russia-Ukraine, is that what we do know is that Joe Biden has been wrong on like virtually every foreign policy issue since he's been in D.C. And some people have remarked on this and like documented how, Biden was against, I think Biden was against the raid to capture Osama bin Laden, and Biden, he's just been wrong on everything. So when it comes to like what I think we should do with Russia, I sit there and I think to myself, well, we should just do the opposite of whatever Joe Biden thinks we should do, because he's been wrong in everything in the past. So, the fighter in me says, oh, I'd love to see the U.S. go in and kick Russia out. All the implications. I will say one thing though. I will say that I feel like everybody is, on the defense for Putin. Everybody's worried about what Putin will do and what Putin will do. And I just don't think that mindset is a very intelligent mindset. I think that this mindset of being all afraid of what Putin would do is a very weak mindset. Being afraid that Putin's going to launch nukes, being afraid that, so we can't do this because Putin might do this. It seems like everybody's afraid of Putin. And that's why we need a strong leader like Trump, because Trump wouldn't be afraid of Putin. And I think that we would see, you don't succeed through weakness, and nothing good comes from weakness. Peace through strength was the term that was, I guess, Ronald Reagan once coined. But anyway, so that's the show for today. Late one here. I see a couple guys popping off. It's getting late, 10:30. Everybody's probably going to bed. But glad you guys could join. I see my brother-in-law Mike is in. Mike, good to have you. Bringing it, boy. Thanks for popping in. They already left. I know Lon up in Wausau was in. He left. Tom from Whitewater, Tom from Delavan area, he left. So great to have you guys in. Thanks for tuning in. And you guys have a great week and carry on. And perhaps we will talk to you next Sunday. If not, certainly Sunday after. But we'll see what kind of news happens this week and take it from there. Have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.